The fight is officially over when it comes to medical marijuana in Florida. So why does the legislature keep the battle going? Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great weekend out there. We are always live on the radio at 9 to start your day off. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, a look at the booming cannabis business in Florida, despite attempts to slow it down. What are your questions about cannabis? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, it's a ProPublica investigation into the murders of three transgender women in Jacksonville. Plus, Culpepper and some trouble at Jaguars training camp. And we'll hear the music of the local group Jagmac. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the state of medical marijuana in our state is certainly an interesting one right now. Now, medical marijuana sales are skyrocketing all over the country, for the most part with few problems. But Florida politicians have tried time and again to limit the scope of a voter-approved constitutional amendment legalizing cannabis that passed overwhelmingly back in 2016. Supporters of the industry say that they feel that voters are being ignored, patients are being left behind, and taxpayers are footing the bill over a mountain of litigation, the most of any state when it comes to implementing medical marijuana. In the most recent case, a circuit judge said on August 2nd that the state legislature is in the wrong by trying to limit the number and organizational structure of cannabis dispensaries. It kind of made us wonder, will this be an issue for voters in the upcoming elections? Well, there's a new political action committee that just got set up in the state for pro-cannabis political candidates. It's called Clarity PAC, the first of its kind for Florida, and dedicated to supporting not only pro-cannabis candidates, but also influencing legislation. So if you've been wondering about how medical marijuana is going in Florida, we're going to take a closer look this morning as we welcome Daniel Locke. He's the owner of Compassionate Alternative Care, a cannabis referral business in Jacksonville. Daniel, good to see you.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And joining us by phone, Joseph Servin, MD, professor and chair emeritus with the Department of Neurology at Jacksonville's Mayo Clinic. Dr. Servin, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Melissa.
And whether it's political obstacles, medical questions, whatever's on your mind, we want you to give us a call right now as we talk about the state of medical marijuana in Florida. What are your questions? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. All right, Daniel. So for over a decade now, the trend lines have been going in the direction of legalizing this substance. But time after time, the courts have struck back at the legislature, saying that lawmakers keep overstepping their authority by limiting the intent of this constitutional amendment with that 70% of the state's voters passed. So as these lawsuits keep flying around Florida, it kind of made us wonder, how is that affecting access to care and access to business people like yourself? Tell us a little bit about your business and how all of this litigation is affecting you or not.
Well, thanks, Melissa. Well, it's really not affecting us so much. What's affecting us is people not really getting the word out of the benefits that patients are getting from the medical marijuana. Really, the legislation is really about flower, and it's just a way to ingest. Flower is what we know as, the buds or the marijuana itself.
Right. Lawmakers don't want people to have the access to the drug in that form.
But since they still have the access to all the other forms to ingest medical marijuana, and people are learning about the CBD, the non-mind-altering, which you really get the benefits from. But it's not really affecting us, because what's happening is patients are talking to each other. Okay. They're going back to their physicians and saying, hey, this stuff's working. And so we're getting more and more buy-in from physicians. So it's really, we haven't felt the effect of this, Melissa, to be honest with you.
And you're a referral business. You help people get the card that will then enable them to get the cannabis.
That's
right?
Our physicians certify folks for the cards. What happens is they go into a dispensary and they say, hey, I want this product. And they say, well, you get the product, you have to have a card. How do I get a card? Well, I go to a physician group and their doctors will certify you if you have a qualified condition.
It's 549-2937 to talk cannabis on the show this morning. Let's talk about some of those conditions, Dr. Servin. Cannabis is helping thousands of patients all over Florida, all manner of medical maladies. And so the medical community, for the most part, seems to be on board with this. Would you agree?
I think, it's a nuanced issue because when you think about it, when we talk cannabis, or marijuana, that plant has almost 400 different individual compounds. And of those two of them come out to the top when it comes to medical. It's THC, which is what can make people high, but is useful in situations where it can stimulate appetite in cancer patients or in people who have AIDS, or it can be an anti-nausea medication. The other big compound in cannabis is something called cannabidiol or CBD. And that recently, a very pure form of this, was just approved by the FDA for its use in epilepsy. What we don't know is that research with this is so limited because it's against the law on a federal level that no one knows if there's other compounds within the plant of those 400 that may be useful. So the only reason we've gotten to this point is, as your other guests have stated, is simply because people took matters into their own hands. But physicians have seen that there are uses, as I said, as an anti-nausea drug in very serious conditions, as an appetite stimulant, or in the other direction for epilepsy for cannabidiol. So there are a few options here that have been shown to be useful.
Okay, so that's a helpful from Dr. Servin at Mayo to talk about. More research is needed. And as he said, we're in this netherworld legally where at the federal level, this is still an illegal drug. But at the state level, the states are moving forward, Daniel.
Yeah, that's correct. And you know, the states are moving forward. And like I say, I attribute the patients for, you know, like Doc said, taking the matters in their own hands and going out and trying this. And, you know, one of the things that you're starting to hear a lot about with the CBD as well is anxiety. I mean, we have patients that are putting down Xanax that have been on them for years that are turning to non-mind-altering CBD. It's life-changing for these folks.
And you've seen that in your business. Tell me about some of the patients that you're getting coming to you.
Well, the anxiety patients. We get a lot of folks with anxiety and chronic pain. Those seem to be the two that our patients, you know, that are not traditional, you know, of cancer, of AIDS, or those things that we're most familiar with. But the chronic pain patients are, you know, they're using, people aren't aware that you have to use so much CBD with a little bit of THC to fight the chronic pain. And that's what we're seeing mostly. And, you know, like I said, the anxiety, the chronic pain, and patients are just coming and telling us that it's changed their lives.
That they feel that it's worked better than other medications. And so, Dr. Servin, hearing those testimonials, those anecdotal accounts, how do you think that will ultimately affect how the federal government looks at this substance of cannabis?
I think it could be extremely powerful. I'll give you an example. The recent approval of the cannabidiol drug for seizures and epilepsy, I believe, and this is my opinion, that the reason that got approved, other than having done the research that showed that it was useful for seizures, was the powerful testimonials from patients around the country who basically said, this has been helping us. And the only reason they got there is simply because parents with their children who had these very difficult to manage conditions they said enough is enough. We cannot wait for something. And they really just became advocates for their kids. And basically, it propelled this entire area, at least for one of those compounds. So I think it could be the government will listen to things such as powerful as testimonials when it's affecting a lot of people.
Let's talk about access to this as well. Daniel Locke, you run Compassionate Alternative Care. You're not a dispensary. You help people get the card that they use at the dispensary. The Jacksonville City Council has been working with legislation that would place some restrictions around medical marijuana dispensaries in this city. All over the state, there's almost this gold rush to grab licenses to sell cannabis. The state has limited the number of licenses. Critics of that move say that they've created what amounts to marijuana cartels, keeping this really lucrative industry in a very small number of hands. Where do you fall on that whole piece of this?
I fall on the piece where I'm not very lucrative. the lucrative folks are the ones who, the stream is very vertical. Okay, the people who own the farms also own the dispensaries. But the talk inside, give you a little inside talk from folks in my industry. The talk is 2020 is going to be legal.
And when recreational?
Recreational. And when it goes recreational, there is no way that they're going to find enough people that meet the criteria. For example, I think to get the farm, I think, don't quote me exactly, but I think it was like $60,000 just for the application. Okay, so who does that eliminate? About 99% of us, right?
Right.
Okay, so when the recreational part comes around, the talk is that it's going to be a lot more vertical.
You think by 2020 the voters will approve recreational marijuana in Florida by another amendment?
You heard it here first.
Okay. We'll have to see, won't we? Let's go to some calls about this. Questions about cannabis? We have the answers with Daniel Locke of Compassionate Alternative Care in Jacksonville and Dr. Joseph Servin, Chair Emeritus with the Department of Neurology at Mayo Clinic. 549-2937. Hector on the west side. Hi, Hector. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is pretty simple, actually. Any idea on how the issuance of the card for chronic pain sufferers affect retired military with TRICARE or VA benefits? And how would it affect concealed carry permit holders as well?
Okay. Yeah, lots of veterans want to have that information. Thanks for that question.
Yeah,
Daniel?
That's a great question. We have not seen any problems with veterans. Matter of fact, many of our patients are veterans. And we're actually now the VA is able to talk about it. The VA doctors are allowed to discuss it. So there's not going to be any effects with your benefits or anything of that nature. Not in Florida anyway. That's the only one I can attest to. The concealed weapon thing, well, that's one that we've really bounced around, and I've talked to tons of folks.
Really?
Yeah, so one of my patients is a retired cop, and I called him, and I said, how does this work? Tell me, I keep hearing that you're going to lose your concealed weapons license. How's this working? Here's what nobody can actually show a law. It's mostly rumor. Here's what, when you take the concealed weapons class, they ask you a question. That question is, do you use illegal drugs? Well, if you answer yes, you probably won't get a concealed weapons license. But if you have a medical marijuana card, you're not using illegal drugs. So that's how you could not have your concealed weapons
license. They might use that as an excuse to deny you a permit?
Correct.
Have you heard any stories of that happening?
We actually have a concealed weapons trainer as a patient, so I think we're okay.
All right, 549-2937. Chuck is over in the Ocala National Forest. Hi, Chuck. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name's Chuck, and I currently have stage 4 prostate cancer that's metastasized to my bones.
Oh, wow.
And I am. It's interesting, believe me. I've been going to Moffitt Cancer Center for 2 years, and I've gone through the chemotherapy, and it goes downhill from there as far as the treatments go. It gets nastier and nastier. The last one they wanted to give me, which I just turned down, was radium-223. You just reach a point in this fight that you can't do it anymore as far as the severity of the treatments that they give you. But what I wanted you to know is I do have a medical marijuana card from Compassionate Alternative Care, and I'm not a big smoker of the bud. I never have been since I was a kid, and I'm 62 years old now. But I do use the CBD oil as well as the THC oil that I get, I believe it's from Trulieve, with my medical marijuana card. Mm-hmm. And before that, my wife had to make the stuff before I would do it illegally, because what happens is when I was going through chemotherapy, you're so sick and you're really out of it. And it's the only thing that allowed me to sleep at night. It reduced the pain levels as well as, it just made me feel better. And the CBD oil, and then I would combine that with the THC oil, and I would get a good night's sleep. I could actually do things again. Obviously not drive, but it allowed me to have a life again. And the good thing about it is I never puked one time through my whole chemotherapy, which lasted almost 4 months. And I actually didn't lose any weight. I had an appetite, all the things that you can think of that chemo will do to you, it does to you. But because of the medical marijuana, I was able to have some sort of a semblance of a life through that treatment.
And it's stories like yours, Chuck, that are why the voters pass this so enthusiastically, because guys like you or women that are being treated don't want to, if it can alleviate pain, I think that's something most people really want to get behind. And I'm so glad to hear that it has alleviated your pain. That is really good to hear.
It's amazing that it has. And they were talking to the physician earlier. I heard him speaking, and they're, I don't know about Mayo so much as I do Moffitt. I've told my physicians at Moffitt, because I want them to know everything that goes in my body. I've told them from the beginning what I was doing, even before I had the medical marijuana card. They won't even discuss it with me. They don't even have a program to say, hey, this is a good thing you're doing. The nurse there might, she might, when he's out of the room, say, you know, you do what you got to do to get through this, because you're stage four. You need to be doing your own thing here, as well as what we're doing for
you. Of course. And I wish you all the best luck in the world. And I'm so sorry you're going through this, Chuck. And I thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. Thank you, Chuck.
Oh, you're welcome. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you. And so, Dr. Servin, what about patients like Chuck?
Yeah, Chuck, when I listen to a story, it breaks my heart. You know, the reality is that there is an FDA-approved version of this THC, one of the versions of medical marijuana, that is used for this purpose. When I hear a story like that, I mean, this is why we have to do two things. You have to do more research to help people like Chuck. And number two, we have to somehow figure out how to kind of not get into the stigma that's associated with this issue.
Say someone came to Mayo Clinic, would the doctors there talk about medical marijuana, or is that not done?
I think that there is a version that is approved that could be discussed. We could not write a prescription for something like that unless it's FDA approved, and there is an FDA approved agent that we could use. I know we would all listen, whether at whatever institution. I think that the main thing is that this is one of those areas that we have to find a way to get us out of the stigma and to have that discussion and listen and to see how we can best help. But no, we would have that talk regardless of the institution.
Okay. Let's take a few more calls. 549-2937. Rusty in Arlington this morning. Hi, Rusty.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
You know, and while I was on hold and listening to further comments by the doctor, he just said that something that's really surprising. There is an FDA-approved version. So that's surprising to me because, and this may be a very naive or simplistic approach, but marijuana is on the federal registry as, I believe, a Class 1 narcotic, no known medical benefits. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is still classified at the federal level as a Schedule One. Yeah.
How can the FDA approve a drug classified by the federal government with no medical benefit? And if we had the federal government remove that classification, make it more realistic, wouldn't that resolve all the issues at local levels as far as now we remove the federal stigma of illegality?
Yeah,
up to the communities now to move forward and find a way to distribute illegal products.
Thanks, Rusty. Okay, and he brings up the whole conundrum of this, Daniel. The states are moving forward. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has done an about-face on this issue from his predecessor and is cracking down at the federal level on marijuana. So the legal issues are really murky.
They are, but let's be real. They are benefiting in every state financially for medical marijuana, okay? Yeah, I don't know the numbers of all the different states, but we've all heard the research. It's not going backwards on this. I mean, they can pound and say what they want, but it's not going backwards.
Bill tweets the show, the revenue alone should get people thinking. Ask Washington or Colorado. Looking at cannabis as a revenue driver in those states where it's legal recreationally. It all comes from the same plant, says another person on Twitter. What's the difference between hemp and cannabis CBD?
Good question. Well, hemp is the marijuana plant had two offspring. They had hemp and they had cannabis. Hemp is more of an industrial product. It has less medicinal effects. There are some good over-the-counter CBDs. I'm not true which ones are which, but I have heard there are some good over-the-counter ones that are working, and they are derived from hemp. The medical grade CBD is derived from cannabis. So those are the major differences. The way that it's been described to me from a patient that's done both is the over-the-counter is like a watered-down cup of coffee versus espresso.
Lots of calls on medical marijuana this morning. Let's take one up in Georgia, if you could put him in the queue. It's Robert in Camden County, Georgia. Robert is on the line. Hi, Robert. You're on the air. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, this is Robert, and I'm calling from St. Mary's, Georgia, right here on the state line. Mm-hmm. My question for you, sir, Dr. Shelby Chen, did an anterior spinal discectomy fusion, my fourth neck surgery in my life. I'm 54. I've never taken any illegal drugs, smoked, or even drank alcohol. I've been on and off many years ago, the opium, your oxycodone, your hydrocodone, and Percocet and all that type of medications. But Dr. Servin, I'd like to ask you, sir, if I may ask you, what are the long-term effects of tramadol and diazepam that I'm currently taking because of my shoulder injections I'm still be getting from my accident, and I need to have a rotator cuff repair from my seatbelt from the accident. I want to know what is the long-term effects from the diazepam and the tramadol versus a form of a marijuana medication.
Right, and so many people.
I want to give a big thank you to the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville. If I may, I highly recommend to your listening audience, they're number one. They're the best in the business for any of your medical needs. Sir, thank you for your
thanks, Robert. Thanks, Robert. Doctor, so many patients like Robert have been taking some form of opioid, and they're considering this switch. Can you answer his question?
Sure. The fact is that opioid, the biggest issue associated with opioid use over the long run is the fact that there is an addictive quality to opioids, and there's no way around it. To the other drug he mentioned, the diazepam also has some element of addiction that can occur with time. And as you use it, in order to get the same effect, the same pain relief, the same benefit, you have to almost take more medication to arrive at that place. When it comes to the issue of the cannabis, I have to go back to the two compounds. THC, the part that gets you high, except that does have an addictive piece to it over its long term, while CBD cannabidiol does not seem to have that addictive element associated with it. Its side effect, short or long run, is really makes you sleepy.
Daniel?
I agree. That's the feedback that we get from patients. Yeah.
And how many patients are coming to you, like Robert, who they need some sort of pain relief? They don't want to get hooked on opioids.
Yeah, Robert is the majority of our patients.
Really?
Probably 70% of our patients are Robert, okay? And what they're doing is they do a high percentage of the CBD. You know, somebody like Robert, for example, who says, hey, I'm not a smoker. I've not done it in the black market. That's not me. Okay, we encourage those folks to do a high concentrate of CBD. And then maybe towards bedtime, you know, mix in a little bit of the THC to go with it. You actually have to have both to fight the chronic pain. Most folks aren't aware of that.
Let's take one more call on this. It's Chip in St. Augustine. Hi, Chip. Good morning.
Hey there. Boy, I'm going to try and condense this because it's all-encompassing. But you really ought to consider doing a series of shows on this because it really goes further than people even really realize. Marijuana was made illegal back in the 20s, and it was actually started by the oil companies. There's a movie out called A Brief History of Marijuana. It's only about an hour long. You can get it on YouTube, and it'll really give you why marijuana is in the state it is now. Nixon even did a study, and they produced a giant book about all the things that marijuana did, but he was interested in doing HMOs, and so when the book came out and it wasn't saying everything was bad like he wanted it to, they canned it. From socioeconomic, it's a way to keep poor people under the thumb of the law enforcement. Anything that you can make out of petroleum products, you can make out of hemp, and that keeps the petroleum industry fighting against it. The paper industry does not want it because hemp produces three times more fiber than pine trees do, and it's like a tenth of the impact on the environment. It's almost a godsend. I mean, I don't want to make it out to be just the cure-all of everything on the planet, but it could be a significant change in our culture. But it was great for thousands of years, and now it's illegal. But there's enough material here to cover hours of show.
Yeah, going beyond the medical uses. Yeah, you're right, Chip. And we're running tight on time, but I appreciate the call. Eventually, market forces tend to win the day, whether it's hemp, medical cannabis. We'll continue following it. I promise you that. So thank you both for being here. Daniel Locke, he owns Compassionate Alternative Care. That's a cannabis referral business in the city. And on the line, Dr. Joseph Servin. He is chair emeritus with the Department of Neurology at Mayo Clinic. Thank you both, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much more still ahead on the show later. The Jaguars took a knee last week. And there were some training camp speed bumps, too. Cole Pepper has a look at sports. But up next, gun violence in the city claims more lives over the weekend as another investigation into recent murders of transgender women in Jacksonville runs into controversy. A ProPublica investigation. We'll talk with ProPublica after this.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport. Who is your American Graduate Champion? WJCT is looking to recognize and honor a wide range of community leaders and everyday heroes who regularly dedicate their time, talent, and resources to prepare students for success and graduation. American Graduate Champions are role models in their communities whose stories have the potential to inspire others to take action. The nomination deadline is September 1st, 2018. Go to WJCT.org to nominate your American Graduate Champion today.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this morning, police are offering a reward for whoever shot and killed a 7-year-old Jacksonville girl over the weekend. Heidi Villanueva was sitting in her family's car at a busy Westside shopping center Saturday when gunfire erupted between two groups of people nearby. Heidi was tragically caught in the crossfire. Also, last week, 32-year-old Jamie Roque was fatally shot in the drive-thru of a McDonald's on the South Side. Now, we all know gun violence remains a horrendous problem in Jacksonville. We've been Florida's murder capital on and off for nearly 20 years now. And gun violence has also taken the lives of three African-American transgender women in this city over the last 6 months. And those deaths have been compounded by the issue that police have incorrectly identified the victims as men. An investigation by ProPublica finds that nationwide, some 65 different law enforcement agencies have investigated the murders of transgender people since January of 2015. And in most of those cases, the victims were identified by names or genders they had abandoned in their daily lives. Advocates for this community say that not using the name and pronoun a person was known by can slow down an investigation during its most critical hours. People who knew the victim or who saw them right before they were killed might only have known them by their preferred name and gender. Ken Schwenke is a reporter for ProPublica, and he's on the line now with more about this investigation. It's called Dead Named. Ken, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And so we've had four Black transgender women shot in Jacksonville in the last 6 months. Three of them died, which prompted ProPublica's attention to this. Can you begin by explaining the term dead named for our listeners, what that means?
Yeah, so dead naming in the transgender community is a word that is used when people use your birth name or the name you no longer use in general. But it's sort of this specific problem that occurs when they're victims of crimes or when they've been murdered. And so what we discovered was that people are frequently dead named or have their wrong name used when they're killed and police are investigating.
And how does that impact investigations? What does the data show?
So what advocates have told us is that, you know, the first 48 hours are really important. And so if you, let's say that somebody is killed at a hotel and you go around and you start asking people at the hotel whether they saw a man go into the room, but this was a woman, right? Those people might not know whether that person was the person they were referring to or not. And what we found was that in about 55% of cases, there were arrests. In a little more than half of cases, there were arrests in these murders of transgender people.
We've had a rash of these killings in Jacksonville, which has drawn your eye and other national media as well. What you find, though, is that, isn't this right, that transgender people are routinely misidentified by law enforcement officials all over the country? The JSO here in our city has come under fire for this, and they're trying to liaise with the LGBT community now over this issue. But this is not a problem unique to this city.
No, it's not. So in 74 out of the 85 cases that we looked at, victims were identified by names or genders that they no longer went by. So it's sort of the vast majority of law enforcement agencies actually engage in this practice. And the sort of depressing fact about this is that law enforcement agencies will usually engage in this practice the first time a trans person is killed and sort of fix it after the fact. And so people literally have to die before law enforcement agencies change this way of talking about people.
And some bigger police departments have changed their protocols. Dallas, I think you wrote?
Yes. So the Dallas Police Department has had a few murders of transgender people. And so they say that when they investigate murders, they make an effort to use the names and pronouns that the person was known as in the community. The Austin Police Department has also made some inroads towards this, as has the Los Angeles Police Department.
This is a vulnerable community subject to harassment and, of course, homicide. Also, they have a difficult time gaining employment, and a lot of it has to do with their paperwork. As you write, common interactions like voting or showing your ID at a bar, that can identify a person as transgender. It's something that they call getting clocked. Can you talk a little bit more about that dynamic and how that affects people that are in these situations?
Yeah, so getting clocked is, as you said, the way that the trans community talks about basically getting identified as being trans. And we talked to several women who basically said that job opportunities disappeared when they were clocked or identified as a trans person. One person that we talked to, Savannah Bowen, a Jacksonville resident, said that she changed her name in 2017 after an employer checked her ID and saw that her name was not Savannah on her identification. And we talked to other women who said that they, you know, started a job and when the employers realized that they were trans, sort of just let them go, right? And like these jobs dry up so often for these people, even if the employers don't say directly, which of course they won't, that you're not getting this job because you're transgender, they start to see a pattern in their own lives and in the lives of their friends.
A pattern of unemployment and having trouble accessing medical care. You write, but being forced into sex work is common. So a big thing then is to have the correct identification on documents, but that can be difficult to obtain. What are some of the biggest hurdles people face?
Oh, wow. So they can be really varied across the country. So in Florida, for example, one of the hurdles that affects some of the trans community is that you can't change your name if you've ever been convicted of even a low-level felony. In other states, changing your gender marker requires surgery. And so the gender marker is the little M or the F on your driver's license. And so it requires surgery, or it can require an amended birth certificate, or even changing your name in some cases can require a court order. And judges can deny these name changes and gender changes at their own discretion. So recently, an Ohio judge denied a transgender teen a legal name change and sort of insinuated those because he thought that transgenderism was a fad or that this kid might have been influenced by the media. And in Utah, the Supreme Court heard arguments this year from two transgender people who were denied gender marker changes. So even if you try to go about this in the correct way, you can hit roadblocks really easily.
You know, when Bruce Jenner became Caitlyn, the biggest name in this country so far to come out as trans, that was educational for millions of Americans to learn more about a community that is still so widely misunderstood. And as you report on this, it seems that the criminal justice system, the courts, the police, they're all still catching up to the needs and identities of this community. There's a lot of misinformation and a lot of confusion. I think among millions of Americans who simply don't understand transgender people and what their identities really mean to them. And so as you report on this, how important do you think these stories are and just continuing to, I guess, raise awareness about this, because there really isn't a lot of awareness both among the general public and at an official level, as we found?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the women that we talked to broke down in tears just talking to us. She said that she never thought she'd be in a position where people would care to hear what she had to say about her own life and her own experiences. You know, there aren't a lot of Black trans journalists, right? There aren't a lot of probably trans journalists in general. And so there's not a lot of mainstream attention. There's, you know, there's some good TV shows on right now. There's the show Pose on FX that is written, produced, and acted by trans people, and it's fantastic. But, you know, it's a story, and it's a fictionalized, and it's a very specific time and place. And right now you have trans people living in the U.S. Who feel wildly misunderstood. And when people say things like, what does it matter what I call you? You know, it's basic dignity to these people. It's basic dignity to be called the way that you call yourself and the way that you're known. And so I think it's just so important to talk about these issues and to get it right.
The pressure the local trans community in Jacksonville put on JSO paid off earlier this month when police announced the creation of a group of officers to serve as a liaison to this community. How do you rate that response?
I think that it's a really, really excellent step for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office to take. They had very technically an LGBT liaison beforehand, but that specific person was also an undercover police officer who nobody in the actual community knew who that person was outside of some people at advocate organizations who spoke to that person. And to have people that the community can feel comfortable with reaching out to with their concerns, I think is really critical. I mean, it means that they're heard, and it means that it's possible that, you know, there's inroads to change.
Well, you can read more about this important investigation at ProPublica's website. It's called Dead Named, looking at murders of transgender women right here in Jacksonville. Ken Schwenke, one of the reporters on this story. Ken, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but keep listening because two really cool things coming up. First, Cole Pepper talking about the Jaguars. Now, the Jaguars had a protest at the preseason game. They stayed in the locker, some of them. There's also been a suspension of two of their top players after a heated day at training camp. We're going to talk about that, too. Also, they're known as Disney's next big thing. Straight out of Baltimore, the performers of Jagmack are in Florida. We're going to talk to them. If you're listening to Disney radio in your car and you have kids, you've heard of Jagmack. So keep listening for sports and keep listening for a little music. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
ABC Fine Wine and Spirits, Florida family owned since 1936, featuring its new sourced and certified collection. Event concierge service, plus daily sampling. Celebrations begin at abcfws.com.
On the next Fresh Air, the co-founder of Sire Records, Seymour Stein, who discovered Talking Heads and the Ramones and signed Madonna and Ice-T. Also, Jim Gavin, creator of the new AMC series Lodge 49, about a bereaved surfer named Dud who stumbles upon a declining fraternal order like the Elks. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Life on college campuses has been a happy hunting ground for lovers of a good laugh. From Lucky Jim to Educating Rita, our halls of learning are full of characters who are well-informed and often funny. The Shakespeare Requirement is Julie Schumacher's latest novel. Some call it an antidote to academic tweedy types. We'll find out why next time on 1A. Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
The Forever Changed exhibit looks at Florida history from its naming in 1513 to being designated a United States territory in 1821. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the Museum of Florida History in Tallahassee. We'll discuss new web extras for Florida Frontiers and the Holocaust Center in Orlando. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the Jaguars suspend two of their top players after a heated day at training camp.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
This after the flap over some of the players hanging out in the locker room during the preseason national anthem against the Saints. What's going on with the Jaguars? Here's Cole Pepper. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Well, it started with one of the periods during a scorching hot day yesterday at training camp. In a drill where tight end James O'Shaughnessy was popped by Dante Fowler, O'Shaughnessy tried to get out of bounds. This happens all the time in camp where you're trying to do a two-minute drill. Fowler, just 2 days back on the field after a shoulder injury, kept him out of camp, and he looked like he was just trying to prove something, maybe, and show that he was ready to go. A shoving match broke out, and teammates rushed to separate the two. Then at the end of practice, Fowler and Yannick Ngakoue had to be separated by teammates as they got into a verbal joust. Pretty heated there.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit unusual because those are two guys who are defensive ends. A lot of times you'll have a defensive end and offensive lineman getting into it, or a wide receiver and a cornerback. There's almost always some kind of pushing and shoving, little fracas at training camp. This was the first one this year. But as Jalen Ramsey walked over toward reporters who were recording the fight or the pushing and shoving match, Ramsey yelled an expletive-laced command to stop recording to reporters. Both Fowler and Ramsey now have been suspended by the team for violating team rules and for conduct unbecoming a Jaguars football player. The team is not saying how long the suspensions will last, but an NFL Network report has it at 1 week for at least Ramsey's suspension. If that is the case, then Ramsey would miss the Jaguars' combined practices and preseason game in Minnesota with the Vikings this
week.
And
you're going?
I'll be heading up there to cover the Jaguars' combined practices. By the way, last year the Jaguars had combined practices of both the Buccaneers and the Patriots. And looking back on it, the team said that the work they had with the Patriots was particularly important. So I'll be keeping an eye on how the team responds without Ramsey and Fowler there, how the rookies are doing on their first road trip, and also keep an eye on how the passing game does against the Vikings defense, which was actually ranked number one of the league last year.
Oh, wow.
Ahead of the Jaguars, which was number two overall.
Well, we'll look out for that and catch Cole on Channel 4 as he follows the team up to the frozen tundra of Minnesota.
Probably not too frozen right
not,
now.
Not right now, though. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Okay, finally this hour, they are the up-and-coming group building a reputation as Disney's next big thing. Take a listen here.
PJs and movies kicking back like any other night. Oh yeah. We was just chilling, now you wanna go and start.
Six siblings, four brothers, two sisters from Baltimore make up the band known as Jagmack. They are traveling through Florida this month and join us now in studio. Hey, kids. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having us.
It's Jared, Angelique, Gabriel, Manjo, Alyssa, and CJ. You've all grown up together making music. Jagmack, just a group of musicians and artists creating, or does it stand for jazzy and groovy music all over?
That's the first time we've ever heard that one.
Or joyful and gorgeous, moving and captivating.
Oh, I don't know about that one.
Thank you.
So you guys are really blowing up on Disney Radio. You performed at Wembley Stadium. All over the world you're performing. really exciting.
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. We love doing it. It's amazing because, you know, not every family and not every group gets to do what they love to do every day with their siblings. You know, you look to the left and to the right and you're just on stage with your family and also your best friends. It's truly a blessing.
Yeah. It's great to see six brothers and sisters on stage together. Now, you're going to be performing in Orlando later this summer?
We are. Yeah. So we are actually going on tour with In Real Life starting September 9th. And our last show is in Orlando, so October 10th. So get your tickets on our website, jagmacmusic.com.
Jagmacmusic.com. And a special treat, Jagmac's going to perform live now in studio.
Yes.
What are you singing?
We're going to be singing our single, Right Back With You, but our acoustic version. It's quite different. It's a little jazzy. I hope you like it.
Here they are, Jagmac.
One, two, three, four.
PJs, I'm always kicking back like any other night. Oh, yeah. We was just chilling. Why you wanna go and start a fight?
Oh, nah, 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 nah.
So, rah, rah, rah. All I hear is blah, blah, blah.
Ooh.
Do even try.
Girl, I can understand why I can never win with you.
1, 2, 3, 4.
You be tripping, I'll be wildin'. We always back and forth. Oh, yeah. First I hate you, then I love you. Why is it so difficult? But you know I kinda like it.
Baby, hey. This is crazy. Cause I'm right back here with you.
Right back with
say,
you.
Say, baby, can't explain this. But I'm right back here with you.
Right back with
it's
you.
It's not like I don't got options. Ain't the only one that's popping. There's a million others I can choose.
Drive me insane. I wouldn't have it any other way. Ups and downs going through the maze. You and I said yes for life.
I would never leave your side.
Your side, oh, your side. Yeah, baby.
Baby, this is crazy. Cause I'm right back here with you. Baby, can't explain this, but I'm right back here with you. Oh, oh, oh.
Cause I'm right back here with you.
Hey, hey.
Cause I'm right back here with you.
It's Jagmac. Go to jagmacmusic.com. Keep singing, guys. 1A is up next. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.